Excuse me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 15th of February. We have Cheryl Langdonor, Tatiana Kramtsova, Alan Greenberg, Ted Suzuki, Mike O'Connor, Jeffrey Eckhaus, Michaela Nalon, Paul Diaz, Ron Wickersham, Barry Cobb, James Bladel. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, Linda Saint-Gerin, myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies noted from Mason Cole and Oliver Hope. And if I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Gisela. I keep on forgetting to ask people if there's any updates to statement of interest or disclosure of interest. I'm assuming someone will scream out if there is one. Other than that, this is, in theory, our last meeting prior to publication. So I think if we're going to publish, if we are going to publish, which I think all of our intent is, we need to either come to closure on the recommendations at this point or decide that we will differ and publish something to that effect. Any general comments before we dive into them immediately?
It's Jeff here. Sorry, I've got too many screens going on. I forgot to raise my hand here. Is somebody ahead of me or?
No, you're on.
All right. So one of the things I have some individual comments on these, and by the time I finished them, it was already too late to send it around. So I'll just discuss those. But you know, and if this was questioned on the last call, last few calls that I missed, I apologize. But have we gone back and looked at these recommendations as a whole and say, and looked as a group and say, do these answer the questions that were initially raised in the PDP and answer them? Because I sort of looked at it and I think we've really gotten further away from what the original PDP was, what the questions were, what our tasks were. And before we dive into like the details of what these recommendations are, have we gone through that and said, do these actually answer the questions? Does this help resolve what the PDP was brought about for? Because I'm missing that a little bit. But if this was brought up and you know something was discussed, then I'll just say okay, I missed that part, and we can go on.
Yeah, I don't think we've discussed it formally. I know I've gone through it, and I'm sure Marika has gone through it in trying to attribute each of these recommendations to where does it fit under the charter questions. And I don't think there's any problem with all of those fitting. I don't know if anyone has specific concerns, so I think the answer is yes, it has been reviewed. It hasn't been reviewed communally on a call. Marika, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think there's a bit of roundabout way to go back to that, because if you look at the the source proposals that we have identified and go back actually to the source proposal, there the different recommendations were categorized underneath the charter questions. So my thinking would be as well, once we finalize this language, I go actually back to that document to make sure that the right recommendations are inserted under the appropriate charter questions. And I think if you look in the report as well, it should track as well with the discussion notes and the items that we've discussed as part of the working group survey, that it becomes clear where the different items fit in response to the charter questions.
Okay, yeah, that would be tremendously helpful if on the recommendations, if those could track. I don't want to give you an incredible more work to do, but if it just to see, because some of them I'm lost on how it tracks to it. And if you said hey, this tracks to this question, that would be a huge help. But if you say it's an enormous amount of work, then I understand. But that would be very helpful to see that.
Yeah. It was all, as Marika said, it was all in the proposals. When we went to the recommendations, we ended up with enough columns that I didn't think it was salient to the discussion we were having, so I didn't put it as a column in this particular document. But it will have to be, the references will have to be made in the formal report. But my recollection is every proposal and therefore every recommendation did track to one of the charter questions or another, or in some cases several.
Right, and the reason I ask that is because I think about other, PDPs and some of the pieces, and I think when answering, like, for example, Alan, you were on this with me, the STI on that one, and there were some others that and in other PDPs where you say, hey, you look at the response, and then that helps on the votes and say if I'm in agreement with it, if I don't, because just saying, looking at a recommendation standalone differs very much from does it track to this question? Is it helping to answer it? Is it helping to do this? Is this PDP, are these things helping, resolve this PDP, or is it just recommendations on a standalone basis? So I think it would be helpful before we do before we have a vote, if we do some sort of voting, to have the track so it makes more sense.
Yeah, that's one of the things we need to finalize before the end of this call also, whether we do and how we do. Our hope was we would have been ready before this time to do that, but we're late at this point. All right, any reason not to go on with these specific recommendations? And by the way, with respect to that, your original question, Jeff, I think when we get to one of the later ones, there's an example of something which wasn't tracking, not a recommendation, but a discussion item that wasn't tracking the recommendations and or the charter, and we'll come to that in a few minutes. Okay, I see no hands up. Then I suggest we proceed. I don't know about you, the comments on the screen, I can't quite read no matter how much I blow them up if I still see other things. Hopefully, I have a printed copy, and hopefully the rest of you will make do one way or another. There have been exhaustive comments in some of these. All right, on item number one, there are no comments. We had general agreement. Unless I hear any objection, I'm going to go ahead. Number two is the definition of the what we're now calling the registered name holder at expiration. There have been a whole bunch of comments on this one. Marika added the second statement, if the domain registration was modified pursuant to the term of agreement, so on and so forth. James, I think, added subsequently. I'm not sure it was James, but somebody. There is then a comment. Where is it? I think this is one that someone made a comment that if it's changed prior to expiration, that's hijacking, and there's no evidence that that's happening on a regular basis. Paul, I think you were the one who made some comments. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's Paul. Thanks, Alan. These are my comments, and I was the one who actually struck prior to expiration, replaced with subsequently. I mean, I think we all understand what we're trying to say here, but as it currently reads, it sounds like we're alleging that there's registrars are doing things before the expiration date happen, and there's no proof of that whatsoever. It's simply not happening. So I'm happy to tweak further. I mean, if you want to say if the domain registration upon expiration or any time thereafter was modified, fine. But don't use any language that suggests things are happening before expiration because, pardon, factually incorrect, and it comes across as accusatory.
Yeah, and I think my comment was if there is any hijacking by registrars going on, a provision in the RA is not going to fix that. So we need to address the issues that we can have any impact on. My question is, this is the definition of the RN of the registered name holder at expiration. If we are defining it as the person who was eligible to renew immediately prior, presumably there is no window between immediately prior and expiration. Do we need to worry about what happens to the who is afterwards from the point of view of the definition? Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to add some clarification as why the second sentence was added. I think that's some feedback we got internally after I think there were some questions on there was an initial comment that this should be more specific and And there's just some language that has been suggested internally that might make it more specific. And to Paul's point, I don't think there was any intention to insinuate that, you know, registrars are modifying data prior to expiration. I think this is just to ensure that in the future there are no changes to existing provisions that say that, you know, a registrar might modify the data in order to facilitate renewal. That is, for example, change to an hour before expiration, this is done, or a day before, so that it doesn't create a loophole. That was the intent of this sentence, to make sure that indeed it is the, you know, the registered name holder expiration, even if that, if there are certain provisions that, you know, for whatever reason allow certain changes to the WHOIS data that, you know, facilitate renewal. So that was the reason for adding that. And, you know, I don't think there's a problem changing the expiration, maybe as well changing, leaving out the subsequently, that might do it as well, and just leave it as that. I don't know if that would be acceptable, but that was the intent behind the language.
Okay, I understand that. Now, then I would think deleting subsequently and just being silent there would cover that. Paul?
I was just going to agree with you, Alan. Strike the adverb and leave it alone.
All right. If there's a loophole here, none of us see it today, so we'll have another month or two to look at it. Okay, we have general agreement on this one. Number three, this is essentially making the RGP mandatory for registrars if it's offered by the GTLD. I note, Marika, that we have one instance of registrar with a capital and one without. I guess we should try to be consistent.
What is the preference?
I think we capitalize registrar in general. Registrars, is that typical? I don't know what the RAA does. I think the RAA does not capitalize, but I think we have in general been. I don't much care either way. Just the same, two different versions in the same sentence call out at me. All right, a general agreement. Okay, number four. Being a lot of discussion on that one. The original intent of this was that changes to WHOIS or other or similar changes within a registrar's systems should not essentially on a technicality or because of access issues stop a registrant from renewing. There was also some discussion that the subject originally came up because of transfer issues, but transfers are not salient to this particular PDP, and that's an example, Jeff, of one of the issues that we almost got into but have not, because it is not part of our charter question. There has been a lot of going back and forth. The word explicitly, I think I suggested adding, there was an objection to that, I think by James, and then a statement saying in general he doesn't believe registrars are going to accept number four at all under any terms. Marika, do you have some comments on this one? Because I know that you've had discussions internally on this.
Yeah, this is Rick. From our perspective, I think that might be a helpful clarification for, you know, for example, our compliance team to understand what the intent is of the different recommendations. From our perspective, I don't think explicit is required. So if that is a controversial item in this addition, if that was the issue, I think the recommendation is clear as well without that. So I don't know if that's acceptable to registrars. I see several people raising their hands, so I'm sure they can comment. But I think from our perspective, it's...
Hey, guys, it's Michael Young joining. Sorry, just didn't want to...
Thank you. Welcome, Michael. Jeff, you're first.
Yeah, thanks. I was looking, and I'm still trying to figure out what is the intent of this one for number four, because to me, it's sort of changing... around the contract and the agreement that I have with my customer in our registration agreement. And I'm unsure of what this one is trying to do, so I'm hoping somebody could explain it, because I've looked at the alternatives. I'm besides like the specific language on there, I'm just trying to say, what are we trying to get at with this one? Because it is a major change, and it changes how our contracts are as registrars with our customers. So I'm just trying to figure this one out.
I guess I'd like you to clarify that, because the statements that have been made are that this is sort of assumed, and therefore we don't need it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So what do you mean it's assumed? What is assumed? That what?
Well, assuming we go ahead, and we haven't gotten there yet, but assuming we all agree on the recommendation which says the registered name holder at expiration has the ability to renew under certain terms for a certain number of days, this is simply saying that, and this one should be following that one because it logically belongs after it. This one is saying that that renewal ability cannot be taken away because of a change to who is, for instance.
Right. But, you know, so I'll just, I know I'm going to sort of go completely off base here a second. this is sort of my just a personal opinion. It's not something that we do here as a company, as, you know, so it's not, is that what if I set up a registrar and I say with somebody and I say I have an agreement with my customer saying you can only register it for 1 year. After you know, I don't give it to you. I'm giving you a very special price and I give you other services, but if you don't do this, you know, by that term, by the end of the year, you don't renew it. Sorry, you can't. And both people agree to that in advance. Then what we're doing here is changing some of that around with some of the agreements people have. And that's what I was saying with contracts with customers. You're sort of impinging on people's business models on that. But if people decide to do that, I hope that sort of makes sense on that.
But that's in reference to 15, not 4.
Mm.
I think.
Old 15, new 15.
Hold on.
Yeah, no, that's all right. We can only get to that one. But that's sort of what I was thinking about that. It's when I was saying on the contract and...
You're right. Old 15, new 14.
Okay. So I'll stop. I'll let some of the other people talk and just sort of think about maybe something somebody else will say will make it clearer to me.
Okay. McKaylee?
sorry, throat's gone. There's one thing with this that I see as being a potential issue. If, say, for example, the registration in question is abusive or something, or breaches terms and conditions, or is due to credit card, or there's credit card fraud, or any of these other things associated with the name holder's account, there's no way on this earth that I'm going to allow them to renew that domain name with us.
Well, but that doesn't that apply prior to expiration also?
Well, the wording of this is I'm finding quite hard to get my head around.
No, I understand, but what you're describing is a situation that isn't unique to post-expiration.
Right.
Okay, so the RAA may need some provision, and maybe it's there already, that under certain conditions the registrant cannot renew or may be forbidden to renew, but that isn't unique
sure
to post or prior pre-expiration, I don't think.
That's the problem I'm having, Alan, is that a lot of this stuff has been centered around protecting the registrant's rights/ability/insert random word here to renew a domain name. But that's making the assumption that the registrant isn't a criminal scumbag.
Can I suggest we address this again, because of the time limitation, can I suggest we address this by adding a parenthetical comment or something? I don't know if we're going to have a column for comments, but saying this needs to be, the wording needs to ensure that registrars have the ability of canceling or not renewing domains for substantive reasons, you know, for
Something like that I'm happy enough with. I'll leave the others.
Yeah, and we can't reword it today, but we need to make sure I don't even know if we need it in the recommendation. When they go to write the RAA during implementation phase, or you know, write the consensus policy, that that may need to be addressed. I don't think we need to worry about the wording, but noting it, I think, is an important issue.
Yeah, I think, Alan, the one thing you do have to be careful with the wording is that people will often use that as their kind of architectural framework for things. So you do want to get it in a strong explanation.
Well, there are now discussions in the PDP group saying that people from the PDP should be involved in the implementation discussion. So we'll have another kick at that can.
Yeah.
Okay, Marika, can we note something like that? And I agree with McKaylee. We're not trying to have an unlimited ability to renew if there was cause to not allow you to renew for legal or substantive reasons. You know, if there's a UDRP going on, there's already a provision there saying you cannot necessarily renew. It's frozen at that point. And so we may already be covered somewhere, but we need to note that. James.
Hi, Alan. Thanks, James speaking. And in the interest of time, I'll keep this quick. I'm very much objected to this as written because of the feedback from Jeff about just generic abstract business models and the impact that this would have. And I thank him for providing a concrete example because I couldn't come up with one. But just in the general case, I saw this as being restrictive and possibly reducing the types of business products and services that registrars could offer. And then also McKelly has an excellent point there, and I was immediately thinking of names that were repossessed due to credit card chargebacks or fraud. And, you know, we certainly wouldn't want those to renew. So I think that the other two guys hit it out of the park. I would say that this is exactly the reason why I oppose the use of the word right in this document when referring to the ability to recover domain names post-expiry, because there are so many mitigating factors. I would hate to be fighting a spammer, for example, and find out that they're suing GoDaddy for violating their rights, you know. So I would strongly, I think I did a find replace and just counted up the number of times the word right appears in that context in this document, and I would strongly encourage us to try to find a synonym that gets us what we want without using that particular word.
Noted. With the kind of caveat that McKaylee discussed, can you live with this as it stands right now without the explicit?
It would have to be as qualified to account for both the things that McKelly and Jeff raised. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jeff's one, I think Jeff's objection is going to be on 14, not on 4.
Okay.
We'll talk about that one in hopefully a few minutes. Okay, number 5.
Alan, there's still some people with a hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm working from paper, so I don't always notice. Margie and Ron. Margie.
This is Margie. I wanted to comment on a couple of the observations. I think it was Michael that mentioned that if the language isn't, you know, it tends to be used as the basis for, say, the RAA language, and I agree with that. I think that's a common approach to take the language from a report. So if there's general consensus that there maybe should be exceptions allowed to that rule, and maybe we don't have to go into what those exceptions would be. I think Michaela and others gave some examples that seem pretty reasonable. At least you've drafted the language to take that into account, and then subsequent work can be done to kind of explain what the exception process would be, just so that it's not, you know, an abstract, absolute, you can't do it at all, because certainly fraud or breach of registration agreement or other things seem like appropriate exceptions that, you know, you don't necessarily have to go through that much detail right now.
No, and we will have another opportunity in the actual final report to do any wordsmithing to cover those kind of cases. Ron?
Yes, this is Ron Wickersham. If the registered name holder at expiration is defined as the person who has the right to renew before expiration, then if there's an objection during that period to renewal, we're not granting any additional things, saying you know, you're a scumbag or something and can't renew ahead of time, but this provision says that you can renew only if you let it expire. I don't think it includes that. And then further, I want to say this aspect of saying that words like this interfere with the option to offer services. There's a lot of registrar comments, so I want to make a comment from the other point of view, from the users of the domain names point of view. We feel like there is a right to renew. There is a right to be granted a domain name if we apply for a domain name in good faith. We have a right to have that issued to us, not taken and used by someone else. That was registrar abuse, potentially. That item doesn't seem to be existing now because it was brought up. But to say that there's potential business implications by saying that you have a right to renew in a uniform manner doesn't hit me as being within the point of view of having agreements to have a uniform way of handling both registration, renewal before expiration, and renewal after expiration. I know I brought this up way, way before, and have been willing to say, okay, for the point of view of reaching agreements and consensus, that there seems to be, for some reason, that isn't quite clear to me yet, but I'm going along with the agreement that we are saying that the RIA and other ICANN policies say that when you if we can't use the word acquire, but when you register a domain name and the registration is active, that there are certain policies that every registrant expects to be, regardless of whether it's a reseller, regardless of which registrar you've used. So I'm just bringing the point up, and maybe it'll have to become as a comment, but I find it difficult to understand why we need all the variation and all the picky language to have variations just to renew during a policy post-expiration. And thank you.
Okay, Ron, I would note that if what we end up with when we finish does not address your needs, then I would suggest you be prepared to quickly file a minority report to be appended to the report. Jeff?
Thanks. Jeff here. I just wanted to say to Ron, one of the things he said, why don't we have uniform methods? And I think that was part of my earlier piece, is I think that is the difference on how businesses work and how people, when they go to, I don't expect, you know, the same service at a Motel 6 or a Holiday Inn that I would at a Four Seasons or a Mandarin Oriental. You know, there's different prices, there's different price points, there's different levels of service, and it allows people, you know, broad spectrum consumers to do things, and it lets people compete, and it's pushed, you know, domain prices down, I think. So I think that is, when you say why isn't there uniformity and everyone has the same piece, I think there's different portions of it, and there's different pieces, as like brand protection people, registrars have a certain business model, and what, you know, there are needs of certain brands and what they want versus small businesses versus individuals. So I think we can't say users as a whole want this, because users are a discrete group, and all users want, there are different types of users and they want different things. So that's why I just say there's no uniformity, why there isn't, because there are different needs and there are different pieces. And I think, you know, I think this is something that's been discussed just been brought up, but I don't know where it states that, you know, that there are, these aren't, you know, renewing domains and certain pieces and having grace periods of X amount of time aren't, you know, they're not in a constitution and they're not inalienable human rights. You know, that's something that people keep saying, I keep hearing that, you know, where are these rights? And I don't see where these, you know, what's the genesis of having these rights are, who gave them to people, that people are claiming this is my right. So that's the other part of that. If somebody points out saying, hey, it says here you have this right, then that's a contract and it should be out there. But just claiming like we have these rights, that just claiming it doesn't make it so. That's it.
I would point out that what we're doing here is potentially writing such rights, calling them rights or not.
Oh, yeah, no, and I agree with you, Alan, but that is something we are working on now, not that people are saying, yeah, hey, but these rights exist.
Understand.
And,
James?
Yeah, so that was my point.
James, no?
Very similar to Jeff. I think, you know, the bottom line is what we're describing here is a competitive marketplace. It's resulted in lower prices and just a whole rainbow of products and services and registrars targeting different market segments. And, you know, I think this is a discussion that we've had in some other different PDPs. Is that uniformity is something to be desired in certain circumstances, but we have to recognize that we will eat away at that competitive marketplace. And this is one of the things, competitive market and consumer choice is one of the things that is part of ICANN's mission.
Right.
So we need to pursue that, you know, equally with all of the other concerns that ICANN is charged to be responsible for. And I would point out that, you know, we need to be very careful that we're not personalizing some of these things. You know, I'm representing a registrar on this group, but I am a registrant, and I've had beefs with other registrars, including, you know, possibly my own employer, about their different practices and things that have happened. But you know, I can't say that because I wanted X or because I experienced Y that I am the template that all registrants should experience. Be very different experience from my grandmother or a small business person or a Fortune 500 company, and I think that registrars are trying to serve all those groups simultaneously, and their needs are not uniform. There's not a monolithic registrant model out there, and we just need to be mindful of that when we create these things. Thanks.
I hope we are, and what we're doing here, I think, is attempting to set a common denominator, which doesn't impinge significantly on that model, on the ability to have different models. Cheryl.
Yeah, I was going to come to something that you've now defined as a base common denominator with using the words that the ALAC had indicated in previous comments on post-expiry domain name recovery, which is a degree of predictability. Just going back to the motel and hotel model, there are a few baselines. One expects to be in a fire-safe condition regardless of how much you're paying. One expects not necessarily to have an unadvertised, you must be out by time or it is an agreed to time at the time of contract. And one also would know the difference between having a hammock supplied before you get in, and if you get in there and go, well, hang on, I expected a bed, being able to change. I'm not saying that these are post-expiry domain name metaphor equivalents here. What I am saying is that the consumer, end user, or in this case, person wanting to find cost-effective accommodation in your comparative model, Jeff, usually has longer standing experience and understanding of what they're getting into and their baseline or common denominator requirements. Sorry, my dogs are going crazy. Are slightly better understood, which brings me back again to the role of education of registrants, because some of that non-amorphous mass of registrant differences comes from those who, by the virtue of their use of domain names, are far more savvy and understand probably better than other people in even ICANN or industry do, what the opportunities, options, and possibilities are with their names versus, you know, mum and pop who just want something to advertise their product or even their family blog on.
Okay, I've got to obviously mute again, seeing as I've got things doing things.
Okay, I'd like to try to go back onto the specifics, because we are going to run out of time before we get through to the important ones or some of the other important ones. Any other comments on this issue? Cheryl, I presume your hand is down. No? Then let us go on to number five, which... This one, again, has had many, many comments. In essence, it says that a registrar may delegate some of their responsibilities to a reseller. When I wrote this, I thought this was going to be gladly received by the registrars, because there are provisions in the RAs which says registrars must do such and such, and Jeff had pointed out that in some cases a registrar may have a hard time doing it, but a reseller, because it varies from reseller to reseller. So I thought this was going to be well received. It has not been well received. And there have been a number of suggestions that we take it out, put it in the notes, put it in the discussion. I can live with that. Any comments on registrars or, any comments from anyone on the group? No one cares which way this goes? James.
Well, give us a couple seconds here. So this is James speaking. I think we do care how it goes. I do. I would like to see it maybe as part of our discussion and deliberations rather than a standalone recommendation. I think I noted that in my comments. One concept, and maybe some of the lawyers on this group can help me, but one comment I had was, or concern was, if there's already a generic provision in the RAA and we start including possibly inconsistent language in various PDPs as far as recommendations, then I'm concerned that the generic provision will lose its teeth. And if I ever wanted to go, for example, and I'll just pick on him a little bit, just take Mr. Eckhouse's company to court, over something that I believed was in the RAA, but he can point to something that was in an individual PDP on a specific issue, then I think that, we may have, through our intentions of clearing things up, we may have actually muddied the waters a little bit from a legal standpoint, and that's just a concern.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, James. I'll note that the number five that's on the screen, I think two words have been omitted. I think the first sentence originally read, all RA provisions applicable to registrars dealing with registrar-registrant interactions must be carried out by a registrar or a reseller. Marika, I'm not sure where that got dropped, or maybe I didn't write it to begin with, but that was certainly the intent, that it was saying you can do, it can be done either way, with the second sentence being the standard contract and restating contract law, saying if the registrar chooses to use a reseller, they're still responsible for the under the RAA.
This is Enrique. I think that the first sentence tries to convey that ICANN's contractual relationship is with registrars.
When I wrote it said registrar or registry. That is, must be carried out by one or the other, but because of the contractual agreement, registrars are responsible. I hope we haven't been having a whole discussion here because of a typo. Michele?
Could you repeat what you just said, Alan? I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
My recollection of what I thought I wrote when I first phrased these recommendations, and I'd have to go back and see if I did it or just imagined it, is the first sentence said something to the effect of, are all RAA provisions applicable to registrar-registrant interactions must be carried out by a registrar or a reseller. If the registrar chooses to use a reseller,
the registrar is still responsible under the RAA. But it allows delegation of those responsibilities.
Yeah, I can't support that.
You can't?
No, I think what Paul has put there in the chat is would be similar to my viewpoint. Putting it in deliberations, I don't have an issue with.
Okay.
Because the deliberations is basically, it tracks a train of thought. It's not a case of, because if you put in deliberations, I feel that people will go, okay, they did actually look at this. Whereas if you leave it out, it might just raise questions.
Okay. Margie? Sorry. I thought you were finished.
Sure. Let me clarify this from Margie. We went to the legal department on this, and the reason they were uncomfortable with adding the language, I think the language came from them, that they wanted to take out or reseller, because it had implied that we could enforce against resellers, which, you know, since the contract is between ICANN and the registrars, that's difficult to do. And so I think the reworded language came from us. We wanted to clarify, though, that it was okay to use a reseller. That's why that second sentence is in there. It's just that if a registrar chooses to use a reseller, that doesn't relieve them from the obligation to carry out, you know, to be responsible for its obligations under the RAA. So that's where that language came from.
Okay, but Margie, let me further ask a question. If a reseller chooses to take one of the obligations, let us say posting the renewal price, assuming we agree on that, and says, we won't do it, but our resellers must, does that meet the terms of the RAA at that point?
No, because if the reseller actually doesn't do it, then ICANN has no ability to enforce the obligation against the reseller. So it has to be that the registrar remains responsible.
Oh, I'm not saying who's responsible. That's not the question.
Right.
The question is, can they delegate?
No. Delegation implies that the contracting party is relieved of its obligation, and I think that was the concern.
Okay.
And so
I have no problem dropping this if everyone else is happy. I see no hands. James, tick mark. Okay. Number six. All right, we had James took the words that are currently in the revised RAA for the redemption grace period, added other expiration grace periods, and then in the comments suggested, based on an objection from me, saying could we use other, can't find it right now, but something about other post-expiration or any other time following expiration. James, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. James speaking. Just to be clear, this is coming from the EDDP.
You're right. It is the EDDP, not the new one. Correct.
Right. And so I'm taking the equivalent requirement for redemption grace period pricing, and you know that it be, you know, without getting into what the price is, that it be posted in a clear place on the website if the operator registrar operates the website. And I'm just trying to expand this sentence to make it inclusive of, you know, whatever sort of things we're handling. And so I think this is the appropriate, rather than creating a new policy out of whole cloth, I think that it's appropriate to possibly tweak this section of the existing policy and see if we can't alter it so that it fits what we're trying to do, which is to make expired name pricing, whether it's in RGP, ARGP, or some other thing, just to make it visible, and that's it.
Yeah,
it doesn't have any other recommendations about what it, you know, what it needs to be.
Yeah, the intent originally was that we are adding the requirement to post the post expiration renewal price, and I guess I presumed that when this was actually worded, it would be folded into the same sentence. You know, at the time the reworded RAA section was drafted, but I have no problem explicitly putting it here. I would flip the two in the other order, of put the regular renewal followed by the redemption grace period. But I have no problem with the content here.
Yeah, I just kind of threw this out there as a starting point, so I'm curious as to what some of the other registrars.
Again, I wasn't trying to reword RAA provisions here, just identify what we are adding to the policy. But I have no problem doing what you suggested. Number seven. This was the one saying if they...
Sorry, Alan.
Yes, sorry, go ahead.
This is Marika. So can I just clarify that the recommendation now would read with the proposed modification that James suggests, or any other time following expiration?
I think we should craft it so that the either or, the redemption grace period comes second in the or.
Who's going to craft that?
I will volunteer too if you like.
Okay, thanks.
I'll send that to the list hopefully by the end of the day. Number seven. This is the if I can publish as a website, registrars will point to it for education. There's probably other details there, but I think we all have agreement on that one. No hands. Number eight. This was the suggestion to rename the auto-renew grace period. Someone suggested along the way, I don't remember who it was, that we rename the other one, that is what registrars use. I have a problem with that in that, number one, it's telling registrars what to do at a level of their business that I don't think we should be operating at. Number two, the current term that many registrars use is something that's really understandable to registrants. So suggesting that one change, I think, is problematic.
Alan, you know, weighing in from the registry side as well, you know, changing this is not just a documentation element. This is reflected in the actual EPP protocol. So this would require a whole path through the IETF because it's actually an EPP status. It's are tied to these auto-renew grace period. So it's not a simple thing. Unless there's a really big benefit to it, I don't suggest we rename it just for... we shouldn't rename things that are already in use in the industry in general terms unless there is a very compelling gain for everybody involved.
Yeah, I guess the compelling reason when we were having these discussions was that even registrars and within this group confused the two when we did the original survey because the two are such close terms. And I guess I really don't see the need to rename it from an EPP point of view, but rather from the point of view of the term used in registration agreements and things like that. So I'm not quite sure how to finesse that, but let's go on to James.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, James.
Hi, Alan James speaking. Thanks. And my comment here was, and by the way, we run into this even internally. I was speaking to someone the other day, and they mentioned redemption grace period, but they were really talking about our internal 42-day grace period that we offer to our customers. So I just felt that there were a couple of grace periods that were defined in the various ICANN policies and contracts, and as Michael pointed out, they're defined in EPT and in HUI specifications. So it seemed like we should identify which of the terms, you know, put them all in a pile. Here's all the confusing terms. And then take out the ones that are defined, not quite carved in stone, but the closest thing, you know, let's say they're static. And then find the different terms that registrars are using both internally and in marketing communications with their customers. And I think it's the latter ones that are possibly more least impactful if we start talking about while ICANN shouldn't tell them what to call it, you know, they should definitely not call it auto-renew grace period or redemption grace period or something specifically what terms to avoid so that we can sort out this confusion. But I think trying to go to the source and start tweaking terminology that's in protocols, in IETF documents, and in contracts, I think is a problem.
Yeah, I guess what you end up saying is, registrars don't tend to use the term grace period. They tend to use the term concept auto-renew, and it's that part that overlaps with the current grace period. So,
well, they also use redeem, possibly incorrectly, but they use redeem when they're talking about a renewal after expiry. And I also think that is confusing. And
I mentioned that to Marika earlier in a private conversation, that we've used the word redeem when we really mean renew, I think. I'm not sure we're consistent in our documentation. Jeff?
So two things. One is Michael said he already jumped on that it's already in those specifications, but also that I just want, for us, in our API, and I believe I've seen other companies' APIs in that documentation, some of those terms are used, or we use that within there. So, you know, for us having something like 8,000 or 10,000 active resellers, having them to make changes for the API would be pretty onerous, and I couldn't see the reasoning where it would help. But also the other point I wanted to bring up was there was a suggestion that we leave that term there in the protocols but change it in other areas. And I think if we want to reduce consumer confusion, and that I think having it meaning two separate things in two separate areas would make things even worse. So I would highly recommend against that sort of idea.
Okay, Margie?
I wanted to address the issue of the EPP protocol. I actually sat through an all-day seminar on Friday on EPP, and that was one of the messages that I got from the speaker, was that you really don't want to change anything in the existing protocol unless there's a, you know, it's because it's not used and it's already implemented, that it's very difficult to do that, and it's better to leave it alone if possible. So just to share that with the group.
All right. The will of the group seems to be that this is going to cause more problems than we want to cause, at which point, if there is no people arguing for it at this point, and I don't see any hands up yet, Michele, you wanted to argue for it?
Not really, no. But I do think we should deal with those at the same time. I think we should make a note somewhere in the report that we note that there is confusion in relation to some of this terminology, but unfortunately there is no easy way for it to be changed. I think that, you know, we talked about it so much, ignoring it would be silly.
Okay, you're channeling for me, because I was going to suggest that we mentioned it clearly in our deliberations, saying we would dearly like to be able to change it because it is confusing to everyone, including registrars, but we don't see an easy way of doing it at this point.
Alan, are we going to have a section that's like observations that these kind of thoughts will go under?
I don't think we do right now. We have an opportunity to do that when we, you know, if we're saying observations that we think someone should adjust but we can't, it's probably something we should put in the final report. I don't think we have an opportunity to do it in the next 7 days, though. But I think it's a good idea we should capture.
Yeah, that would be an appropriate place to put this kind of issue in, I would think.
Jeff?
If everyone agrees with
and
that.
And the changing who is the other one that we talked about.
So, if it's my turn, I have a suggestion here on this is to, instead of changing this around, and, of course, since we have no control as groups, say, with having businesses or registrars, whoever, call a certain period what they want to in their own marketing materials, that's sort of, you know, what they do. But I think maybe part of the education here would be to try and educate registrars and registrants to put that out there and say, try and be consistent with this term. It's not a contractual requirement, of course, but we think it would cut down on confusion. It would help everything if people use this term. And I think that could be a suggestion on how to go forward on this.
Yeah. I mean, one of the options is in registration agreements to the extent you have to make reference to the 45-day period, not calling it a name here, that you don't use its name. And that's probably possible to word things like that. It's just when the two things show up in nearby sentences, it does get rather confusing. All right, I think we've killed that one. Any other comments before we go on to the next item, number 9? We are a half hour from the end of its call, approximately. This one says a website will be put up with the help of everybody.
to try to educate consumers. No negative comments. We go on to number 10.
Alan?
Yep.
It's Paul. Look, my comment's off to the side, and the concern was this sent to a registrant in a separate email immediately following initial registration. The concern is, look, all registrars, and I'm sure some more than others, we get dinged a lot for, in certain registrants' minds, over-communicating to the end user. So for something important like this, an ICANN-developed tutorial, it seems to me that that needs sort of special treatment. The idea of a separate email, I think, is just going to get lost in the wash.
So you're suggesting an email and not...
An email, and I think the suggestion ought to be, it ought to go, you know, like with the... a required email, like the who is data privacy, the who is data accuracy reminder, or something like that. I know you want to get it out following the initial registration, in which case, let's not call it separate, but for registrars, I think most of us probably send a welcome or congratulations or something to that effect kind of communication, that it could go with that. But importantly, that, you know, if when it goes, it gets sort of pride of place.
Yeah.
And in my mind, the one that everybody has to do is that who is reminder. It's a contractual obligation. So maybe it goes out initially, and then it gets attached with that annually thereafter to help build education. Otherwise, these things are going to get lost. I mean, a lot of people even blacklist the address.
How about if we say in an email immediately following registration, take out the separate, and in the who is reminder, the mandated who is reminder. James, removing separate, I assume you take as a friendly amendment since you proposed this wording originally?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I have a different thought, but I'll wait my turn on that.
Okay, well, I was trying to summarize. Certainly, I think everyone's agreeing to remove separate, and Paul is suggesting to add, I think you were suggesting to add in the who is reminder, which I think James had originally suggested way back when, but never made it into the words.
Yeah, I do remember that now. We were trying to scare people into what would happen if they didn't pay attention to who is reminder.
I'm happy to add that. James, you want to take it, and then Michele?
I have a really wild, unconventional and therefore probably unpopular idea or suggestion. But, you know, all GTLD registries have a reserved list of invalid names, things like example.gtld, and that's true for, you know, ComNet, org, info, you know, biz, you know, all that stuff. So I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if we could find an appropriate one on that list and, you know, this website, wherever it lives, this care and feeding of your domain name and all the things that you have to do and all the things that could go wrong, is put out there, and all of the registries, just kind of as a gentleman's agreement with ICANN's full endorsement and to the cheers and adulations of the ALAC and registrars, would point one of those invalid names to this website so that that example or sample or whatever would resolve to this neutral instruction manual. So that was just something I wanted to get out there in the record, probably beyond the scope of this group. Thanks.
Yeah, adding a new one is clearly beyond our scope, and I don't think would make us real popular. And I'm not sure any of the existing ones would make any real sense. I think it's a nice idea, though. Michele?
This is Mikey. Let me just jump in on that one.
Okay.
Out of turn on the queue, but this is another one. Much like Michael Young's point, this would have to go through the IETF because there's RFCs on those. And for example, you mess around with example.com and you actually break stuff for people. So I'm a little edgy on this one.
Yeah, most of the stuff to strengthen what Mikey's saying is there's a lot. Most of the things on the reserve list have complexities around them. Now, that's not to say every name on the reserve list is complex, but if you're going to have one of these per registry, per extension, then it also gets confusing more confusing to the person following the link in the email as to why it's different on different registrations. They're not going to really get that. And likewise, would, you know, PIR with .org, for example, would they like to see a forwarded email to a .com site that shows all this information? Ideally not. Probably the best place for a landing site for this is probably under feathered underneath the ICANN registration moniker, because it would be the most, you know, neutral landing site, party neutral, and not really seen as advantageous to any one registry or registrar.
Okay, I think we've heard enough arguments against that, so the specific suggestion probably won't fly. Michaela, you're next, I think.
Two things. First off, with respect to Michael's comments there, I appreciate that, but as I threw onto the chat, you can always use CNAMEs. So, and if you set, if you're using Apache, you set them all up as aliases. You don't have any moderary rights, so nobody's going to know it's whether it's a .biz, a .org will be a .org, a .com will be a .com, and it'll all resolve to the same web page.
You can certainly do that, and well, you know, I know that as well, Michael. But I mean, the reality is, someone's going to have to administrate all that, and the more complex it gets, the bigger the burden of operating that site is going to be.
I appreciate that.
Have we agreed that in the wording we use the wording we have now with the strikeouts in the red, minus the word separate, and add in the who is reminder?
Alan, no, that was where I was getting at. If you just let me, please. Sending a registrant a separate email immediately following initial registration assumes that all registrars and all parties send emails. I would be happier with replacing email with communication, because you don't know for sure that they're doing it by email.
I assume James will consider that friendly. Yes. Communication replaces email. Separate disappears. And add in the who is reminder, which is mandated currently. Although I don't think it says email. We take no comment as being acceptance of that. Okay, let's go on then. Number 10. This says there must be notification of how messages are sent. We had agreement on this as of the last call, and no comments since then. Number 11. Subject to an exception policy, messages must be sent out at specific times. No objection to rewording of the last paragraph. Okay, number 12. This was the old 13. This says you must do push type notifications, not pull. There was agreement. At least one notification post-expiration. And James, I believe, or somebody, suggested that we remove the requirement that it be done a specific number of days prior to the renewal not being allowed anymore. The intent of adding that was to catch the registrant at a time when indeed they may be receptive to a notice from the registrar, as opposed to the rest of the ones they ignored. The comment was referenced to the fact that if it's already in the blackout period, that messages may be problematic. And we have two people with hands up, Jeff followed by Ron.
Yeah, that's specifically my point. If I delete or get rid of the domain on day one, then I cannot send it. And I think this one is just fraught with issues. I think changing, you know, taking down the website, something like that,
is a notice, but if, you know, having the two notifications sent beforehand and then the one after, I don't know if that could help, and I think it just makes it almost impossible to do, because if people delete on day one, then they're not going to be in compliance, and if that's the only email address that is in there.
Deleting is not an issue. Deleting is always allowed.
No, but I'm saying if you shut it down, if you shut down the website, then you're asking, saying, hey, keep up the email, which is difficult to do. It might be very difficult to do for a lot of people. So I think that saying it must be done after, it's one that I personally don't think. I think I'm okay with, you know, with saying before a certain, the timing of it, those sorts of things, but to say that it must be done afterwards definitely within a certain amount of time, I would be against, but I'm against this one in general.
Oh, okay, so you're on this one in general. This isn't a comment on Paul's modification. Okay, Ron?
No, I agree that it should be, the putting a certain number of days makes it even harder.
Okay. So you're willing to accept it with Paul's modification?
I need to think about it, but right now I'm leaning towards no, but I need to think a little bit more because there's a lot of implications to this that I'm sort of working through right now. So, but I'll let somebody else speak on
it. At the point of this call, you're willing to let it leave it stand. Ron?
Yes, this is Ron. Is it okay where we back to the point where we said communication rather than email? Is notification, now we have number 12 with notification must include methods that do not require explicit action. So is that context also contained within the change of email to communication in the previous one?
As notifications of expiration, it says prior to expiration.
Right.
Of intending
so
expiration.
Notification for 12
only
notification for education, is it also helped by this wording?
That is not currently.
So is communication.
It doesn't currently address that, no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, thanks.
You know, there may be merit for putting that in, but it's not anything we've discussed to date. So I think, you know, at that point, it's a comment you could put into the report or a minority report, but I don't think it's substantive enough for that. So is there general agreement that at this point we leave 13 as is, with the change that Paul suggested, that is striking everything after at least and at least? No objections. We go ahead to 14. 14, I'm confused. Marika, can you tell me what we're doing with 14, 14A, and 14B? 14A is the version as modified. 14 is the version as modified by Michael, and 14A and B are reverting to the old one. Is that correct?
That's correct. So the option is either 14 or 14A and B as two separate recommendations, but I think in principle they convey the same kind of message.
I think there is a distinct difference between the two. I wouldn't mind pointing that out if that's okay.
Yes, you're right, Michael. There is a distinct difference. That is, 14B currently refers to any blackout period. Forgive the term blackout. Any of the diversion, whereas the version you proposed integrated says it only refers to that 8-day period.
Right.
Ron, you had your hand up on this one, or is that your?
Yes, I do. Yeah, this is over a matter of procedure in our group. Unless I was absent when it was brought up, there was considerable time discussing the contents of these proposals, these specific ones, but leaving N number of days. Now, as we draw to a conclusion, 8 seems to be in hard copy without having had discussion. Am I correct in that?
This is Mikey.
No,
that's not correct.
That's not correct. There was substantive discussion on it a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
I'm not sure everyone agrees, and certainly not what some of us wanted to see, but there was some substantive discussion, and I think there was general agreement of the people, at least on the calls of those days. At least that was my understanding, that this was something that we could live with at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously subject to further discussion based on the comments during the comment period. All right. I have a strong preference for separating A and B. We've a number of times said we want to keep these things moderately simple and understandable, and I think separating them does that. It there is a change in the intent, but it's a relatively small one, and I think probably maps to what registrars in general do. That is, they don't want to change the splash page partway through, or perhaps change it two times. Any comments? Olivier.
Thank you, Alan. I have a question, and maybe a very dumb question because it might have been treated before, but how does one redirect port 80 traffic when you're not the actual network supplier, you're not the actual ISP? I understand you might redirect the www dot domain name, but
the
redirecting port 80 is a bit strange.
The registrar can change what is in the root zone and direct everything for that domain name. I mean, virtually all registrars do it today.
They can change the zone. They can change the records, but they cannot start directing traffic as such. Strictly speaking, that's incorrect.
Well, they can arrange for the traffic for port 80 to go somewhere.
Nope.
The wording may not be correct. If
they can arrange for the domain to point at their own name servers,
right,
rather than
pointing
at the company's
name servers.
If they
have a listener on port 80, it responds. Nope.
I think we're just talking semantics, so Alan can certainly help with the language a little bit to make it more correct.
Go for it.
Yeah, I was going to second that.
I'll help that offline.
That would help.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll suggest a little bit more technically correct language for that later on.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Alan, this is James with the observation.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Olivier raises an interesting point in his questioning, which is that this recommendation assumes that registrars are operating or have access to alternative name servers to do this, that they can point that to the name server that they control and then make these changes. And while I grant you that it's probably universally true in practice, I don't know that that's something that's ever been required in any of our of our existing policy obligations. I'm just putting that out there. Maybe one of the other registrars can hit me over the head and say, yeah, here it is.
James,
we're assuming something. Yes.
Yeah, James, in all fairness, if you read this, it says if at any time after expiration. I'm not really in favor of breaking it out into 14B anyways, but it says if at any time expiration the registrar directs traffic. So if they don't try and redirect traffic one way or the other, then they're not obligated to.
All right, thank you. There's a couple of services out there I think that offer registrar in a box. I wouldn't presume that they have this feature built in.
That's a new feature they'd have to add, right, to be competitive.
Exactly.
14A you can do by taking it out of the root zone, effectively. There's a number of mechanisms to net do that.
Right. Alan, the problem I have with 14B, let me put it out to the group. The problem I have with 14B is that it covers potentially the entire auto-renew grace period time frame. Whereas when it's incorporated in 14A, like I did in 14, this requirement is restricted toward the 8-day period you're firmly trying to get the attention of the originating registrant and give them the opportunity to renew the name. It seemed to me, and maybe the registrars could you know, could actually put forward their thoughts on this. But if I was a registrar, I think this is a much bigger restriction or obligation if I've got to cover the entire 45-day period, and I don't know that it adds value beyond having it be a requirement during the 8 days. Because, you know, if I complete my 8 days in good stead that I'm supposed to, and you know, it's day 18 or whatever, and my normal practice is to do something else with that traffic, then I have to land it at a web page that basically says, well, you know, this is how you renew the domain, but it's not renewable anymore. You know?
No, and obviously if it's not renewable, then it doesn't apply. By the way, if one went with the unified 14A...
Alan, are you saying... Oh, maybe this is a misunderstanding. Are you saying you want this to mean that if the name is beyond the renewable, guaranteed renewable period anyways, for lack of a better term, that they don't have to land it on a explanatory page?
I would hope that if it's no longer renewable, you don't want to taunt the registrant on how to renew when it's not renewable.
Oh, can I take a shot at rewriting this then? Because I don't think that's clear at all.
Okay, I hold on. Let me look at it, because I thought there was some wording that was added anytime after expiration. I think there was a clause added in an earlier version, Marika, that said when the... I don't remember where it was, but it said when the name is still renewable. I don't know what happened to it in the various iterations. It may have been in a comment and not put in the text itself.
Yeah, all you have to do is say if any time after expiration, comma,
when the name is
still renewable, comma, the registrar. Yeah, that makes
that was there in some version.
Oh, that's much more sane. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I taunting registrants is not one of the things we're in this for.
Right. That's just, it made no sense to me whatsoever. Okay.
Okay. That was left off of the initial one. It did get added, I think, in a comment, and the comment must have been merged into something else or disappeared.
Okay.
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah. Thanks. I have just a question, I think an issue with on 14, and then I guess it would be 14B because it splits up to it, is having what information, what instructions, how it's on the site. And I think James in his comments said it, you know, that goes more to implementation. But I'll just give you some of the things I'm concerned about on this and why I don't think this is a good idea, because what I've seen in practice is I'm okay with having, say, a link, and it says if you are the initial, you know, the whatever it is, or then you can click on, and then it would link to, like, an account login. But I'm concerned about having renewal instructions, other information up on a screen. I think it leads to a lot of fraud, especially if domains, people deem them as valuable. I think that it might not help in the recovery of it to the original registrar. And I think having a link going to an account login or something like that would be helpful, but I think mandating what are those instructions, what's on the screen.
Jeff, let me interrupt. From my point of view, if it says click, if you are the registrant, click here, that's instructions.
Okay, so I think... yeah, so I think we need to reword it then. So the words like, especially using that word explicitly and saying, and it has to give instructions to the original name holder, you know, saying, because some people might want to give instructions to, you know, to just saying in general, saying, hey, this is how you renew a domain here. I think we need to work on the wording on these, just because I think we sort of make silos saying, hey, we're only sending it to this person or only sending it to that person. So I'm a little concerned about that. And I think one of the other points I want to bring up, I think for myself, I know for us is that why I think a link or something, just to add on to that, why that would work. Because for us and other companies like A2Cows, others that work on a reseller model, where having it linked to another company's page on there with instructions from another company would cause confusion versus having a login. An account link would make a lot more sense for those consumers.
You don't have to convince me. I'm convinced.
Oh, no, it's not only Alan. You're not the only one who decides. I'm saying this for the whole group.
I don't see anyone else objecting here. Sorry. I wasn't trying to be glib. I also think I said in the comments I have no problem removing the to the RNH at E. So can someone else suggest the wording they would like to see here, or do you want me to try to reword this one as well? No volunteers. I will try, and if you don't like it, comment, please, obviously. So, not having heard any objections to keeping them separate, and Michael now agreeing that if we add the subject to, it's still renewable, we'll put the next draft out with them as two separate ones. Number 15 was the recommendation that we can't do anything about that WHOIS be changed during the auto-renew grace period if to indicate clearly whether the registrant has renewed with the registrar or not. And I think we're unanimous on that one. 16, best practice is that if messages are sent, that we should try to make sure they actually go somewhere, to reword this. And a suggestion was made by all that we change must to should. And since it's a best practice, I have no problem at all with that. And that is the last item I believe we have. We have 7 minutes to go. I congratulate you all. I didn't think we were going to come anywhere near making this. The things we still have to do are to decide, do we still want to try to do some level of poll of the people on this working group? And I think for Marika's sake, we would be best advised not to do a formal poll, which takes a lot of time to set up, but do it via email if we do it at all. And Marika, you have your hand up. I'll let you speak for yourself.
Yeah, this is Rick. I think a poll will be difficult, seeing the short timeline we have until the publication deadline, which is on Monday. But I think a suggestion might be as well, and that might make everyone a bit more comfortable as well about the report, that we put the recommendations forward as the proposed recommendations from the working group, which I think imply some kind of consensus, but put a caveat there as well that the working group is planning to refine or adapt these recommendations based on the review of public comments if deemed appropriate or necessary. So that might leave sufficient room for further enhancements or modifications that we might not have been able to cover, seeing the deadline approaching. But at the same time, being able to put something out and get some input from the broader community on some of the items that we've been discussing.
I think you're suggesting doing it as a group, not one by one.
Right.
Yeah. Marika, it's Michael. I think also it would be helpful to state that in the final report there will be some kind of tally mechanism indicating the level of consensus we had on each specific one as a group. Because we'll have had time by then to...
Yeah, I think we're obliged to do that.
Yeah. But just to remind the public of that in the report, because not everyone that reads that report may necessarily be aware that that will happen on the final.
Okay. Good point.
We'll add that.
And lastly, we have the report itself. There have been a set of comments be made in the last day or so by Paul, James, and me, and Marika has made a whole bunch of changes. Marika, what's the timing for making changes which are not controversial? I assume something like this Thursday or so?
I'm happy to take non-substantial issues until Friday close of business so I can finalize the report on Monday morning my time and submit it at that stage, assuming that those changes will just be more style edit kind of things. There are a number of issues in the changes proposed. I think, by James and Paul that we might briefly cover, because one item where I noted a lot of changes is to the annex, that is the background section. And I think, as we discussed before, that is a copy and paste from the issue report. You know, if there are any items that are not covered in the report, I think it makes more sense to highlight them there. But if people have a lot of concern about this section, another proposal would be just to take it out and include in the background section a link to the issues report, so people can go and find that information if they want to, but, you know, not reopening some of the discussions that we've had, you know, over and over again.
Certainly from my point of view, I think linking to it at this point is probably the cleanest thing. We can always revisit that in the final report, where we want sort of history to reflect the whole story. And I believe that the various comments, or the intent of the various comments, because there were words like, ALAC made claims which were not substantiated, I think those statements belong in the deliberations, because those are points that were made by registrars during the deliberations, and they should be highlighted there to the extent that Marika can insert them, moderately quickly and accurately. And I think that's where they belong, not trying to re-edit the document, which was just extracted in whole, with a few typos corrected and things like that. Is that agreeable to the group?
Fine by me.
And Alan, on another note, I'm hoping if you're able to turn around the recommendations later today, that I can try to incorporate all of that tomorrow in an updated draft, because I think most of the other edits that were provided by James and Paul and yourself didn't consider them substantial, and if someone considers them substantial, they should raise that. So I hope to be able to publish a new draft which incorporates all the recommendations and the language and other items that we discussed today, so people have an almost final product to look at.
Yeah, I would suggest, if it sounds reasonable to people, that what goes into the report is does have a column of comments or intent, which may not be complete. There may not be everyone, but we try to raise some of the issues that were of great concern, either why we're doing it or the problems people had with it, just so people reading the recommendations can get a flavor for either why they were there or where the disagreement still stands. I don't know to what extent we can clean that up in the next couple of days, but I would suggest that will help people reading the report. If that's okay, I don't have any meetings tomorrow morning for the only day of the week, so I will work tonight and get the recommendations turned around before I go to sleep. So you will have them tomorrow, barring a major catastrophe on my part. And I would ask anyone who anyone who has an interest in going through the documents as Marika turns them around, and if there are anything really pressing, then let's get it back quickly, because we're not likely to be given an extension.
I'll give it a shot, Al.
Okay. And this is our last call prior to publication, unless we decide we want another meeting. What is the feeling of the group? Do we feel comfortable enough we can finish this on email and won't have any showstoppers that will suddenly be added at the last moment? I think if there are any showstoppers, then we simply reflect them in the comments, the comment column that I was talking about, and let it be at that. I don't think we want to go back from publication at this point. We're too close. All right. We have general agreement and a couple of comments saying, Marika, are you back? You are back.
Yes, I'm back. Sorry, my 1.5 hour.
And Paul says, what about future PEDNR meetings? You people want more? I think we have no choice. I think we have no choice once we get comments back. I don't think there is a need for another one until after that. Marika, did we settle on the number of days of comment period?
I think at the last meeting we set 45 days.
Okay. I recall that, yes.
Okay, Marika, anything else? You have your hand up, and then Paul.
Yes, in relation to a next meeting, and it might be helpful to have a meeting the Tuesday before the San Francisco meeting starts, so we can maybe just talk through the workshop that we're planning or the presentation we're planning of the report, and I hope by that time to have some slides available, and maybe we can talk about how to divide the workload or how we want to run that. So maybe we can just schedule a call for that moment.
Okay, sorry. Which week were you talking about? Next week or the week after?
The 8th of March.
No, 8th of March, right.
Okay, which is several weeks away, I think. I can live with that. The week I leave, but the week everyone leaves, but I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, hopefully it won't need to be a long meeting.
Do we have a time yet for the meeting there?
No, not yet. I know. I think I initially said that we were looking at Wednesday, but there are a lot of moving parts. The problem is there are several GAC board meetings that are being scheduled, so we might need to move our meeting. I'm trying to find a time where we don't conflict with any GAC board new GTLD sessions, which I presume will attract a lot of.
We've put enough time into this that I think we deserve one decent meeting spot.
So I'm really doing my best, and I've found a time. I think we're looking at Monday sometime.
Okay.
But as I said, I don't have any sight on other moving parts that might pop up. So
if you can reflect the bitterness in that statement, you can. You're welcome to.
So as soon as I know more, I'll inform people.
All right. So we meet on the Tuesday prior to the ICANN meeting in San Francisco. I wish you all a good couple of weeks off. Thank you very much for the work you've put into this, and I look forward to seeing comments to get this out next Monday. Any other comments?
No, thanks.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Great job. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan. Bye.
Bye.